This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
Sitting in my hot seat today is a very special guest. Ashley Monraj is the Chief Technology Officer of Pivotal Technologies, which is PVOTAL.tech. He's also a cybersecurity expert. This is going to be a great conversation. We're talking about the digital transformation at light speed. Ashley, welcome to the hot seat.
Thank you, Gary. First, I'd like to rapidly give you a bit of context. So been doing a lot of security for mobile, security for critical infrastructure, for hardware, and finally got more into the large payment systems and critical systems afterwards. My objective was mainly to focus on how to improve next generation cloud computing, how to improve containers, how to improve analytics. And from that experience, we noticed that at the end of it, before transitioning into Pivotal, that the big issue encountered by those large organizations is the inadequacy of the processes for managing the security, managing the cloud assets. For example, having on-premise one global prod network versus on cloud. If managed better, you could have multiple projects and multiple shared VPCs and have multiple rules that to be managed. And those internal processes didn't really match up. That's just one example. And when you start thinking about the recent movement in the past 10 years towards containers and left shifting, which means that everything is closer in code, and you tend to use way less servers, but instead way more code, the methodology kind of changes. And that's where we wanted to contribute and provide way more value than, let's say, consulting groups that don't provide the interconnect between the different layers of cloud configurations, IAM, project, shared VPC, provide all of those for large enterprise customers that don't want to have a lot of SaaS, that want to be more focused on premise, less third party. Our methodology tends to care for them. And we're using a term called venture builder now for the type of builders that addresses systematically the ends of large enterprise customers with very little third parties, but using a lot of open source, a lot of cloud native features, and trying to reduce the operational cost by having more efficient microservices. And in our case, Go and gRPC make it basically maybe kind of increase a bit the development cost due to the complexity of those new systems, but it reduces it by a factor, let's say, of 5 long-term compared to Node.js REST, and 15 times compared to Java REST-based systems for our version of high transactional systems. So basically to justify the transition to our more secure templated, better managed versions and operations, we get way lower operational costs. The other advantage is we have experience. We've been doing quite a few times in retail, in e-commerce, in World Cup entertainment systems, and focusing recently more on the high velocity transactional systems and completely redoing them. So that's been our focus. Or we've been helping on the other edge governments, because we have a practical experience with a new protocol, practical experience how to manage the cloud and those configurations. And we think that that expertise doesn't come from only knowing, but experiencing, putting into practice, operating, recruiting, gives us a specific vision of what is actually applicable, because we've encountered or done ourselves many times, provided advice that we don't do ourselves. It's just the best case. But when you try to actually implement the use case that what is provided, for example, by the specific experts, you end up with systems that are very, very hard to manage, because you're, after following it, you realize that you're one of the rare ones who's actually applying it in reality. So our objective as a group was to not only be more efficient, but also experience those the new technologies, put them into practice, leverage them with more automation, better IAM, better segregation, container first, use all those properties that people want to have, but we've been actually leveraging them to achieve a state that we're now calling low ops, where the patterns are better defined. You need less operation people, you need less analysts, you need less submissions in the ticketing systems, and you left shift more towards code, and security review is also done in code. Operations is more oriented towards code and terms that we mentioned now, such as infrastructure as code. And so that's kind of our core focus on building, venture building for large groups, making sure those engines work with a lot of automation and try to make it more efficient and cheaper in order to serve more people, going from bigger to smaller instead of the usual mechanisms followed by startups or tech groups, which is smaller to bigger, because we've noticed that if you don't follow the operational structure, the business lines of a group, and try to address that from the get-go, you won't do the opposite. It's impossible to do from small to big, but once you do multiple business lines, it's easier to go to one business line and one layer of control. And so it from bigger to smaller is easier as a transition, but you need to have better interfaces, you need more polished products going smaller. So that's why we're doing more code and higher end of the spectrum for now.
That's wonderful. And really, to have a digital transformation, a lot of governments, a lot of e-commerce and banking and other really high-end transaction needed folks, they may not have the skill set to do 5, 10, 50,000 transactions, you know, a minute or even 5,000 a second. And you've got that experience. You've done that not only fast, I call it light speed, but secure and easy to maintain. And on compliance, what do you guys do to help your clients deal with regulations?
So one of the big questions we get or we usually ask back when we start is, where do you want your infrastructure to be deployed in which cloud? And so depending on that answer, it defines exactly a country and a data center. And we usually have three subregions, but that applies to then, and then we use our libraries and patterns and open source code based on Ori to deploy into the authentication, the applicative services. And then we also deploy an analytics project for them. The first two, we try as much as possible to respect the most stringent right to forget regulation and not only regulation, but good practices in terms of user perspective, because I think it's a fundamental right to have a right to be forgotten. Where it becomes a bit more of an issue is the delineation of who owns the massive data set on the analytics side of things, where the data only contains UUIDs. It lost maybe, it sometimes it loses, but sometimes not. The association, first name, last name, or to the UUID, for banking or other domains, that information is required for at least 5 years. So must it be stored without any human having access to it? Does the company own it? Or does, once we remove the first name, last name, does the rest of the property or the data set owned by the company or owned by the person? That's where I think the crux of the issue lies now. Because on the applicative end, if done correctly, it can be removed on the analytics end. That's where it's a bit more tricky. In order to have a easy way to answer correctly compliance, it's more of a case-by-case basis and the laws of that specific country for the analytics part.
And you're used to dealing with those cases and those issues and scale. What about, you know, what's scaling lately is artificial intelligence and Bard and ChatGPT and Bing and these APIs and the data lakes. And a lot of companies are making API calls, but maybe they're not thinking about the privacy risks or compliance risks. And then on the bad side, the bad guys are maybe poisoning data lakes. Where does this lead with AI, and what can you do to help your clients?
So now that we've figured out a big part of the applicative to high volume, we're leveraging the concept of even sourcing at scale, which is rare, but that's kind of our main technology key, plus leveraging gRPC and gRPC Web, which are other technologies that are more efficient than REST. Now we've been focusing lately more in the past 3 or 4 months on leveraging AI for specific use case where the data is a bit more public. The reason being the data of a model is still embedded and in the weights of a model. So it's using fairly large language model, such as for using a chat for an FAQ, using very specific use cases of embedding questions for historical perspective or historical stats. So those use cases can embed because it's public data, but when it gets very tricky, and that's where I think where the big platforms are doing as well, is they're leveraging multiple smaller models that can be also technically large language models, but they're not leveraging the detailed weights of it. And they end up querying applicative databases or vector databases that contained real data in order to prevent the models from hallucinating and giving data that they shouldn't from a particular person. And so that's, I think, where we're going to be orienting ourselves, where we're going to see more and more advanced large language models kind of embedded in the browsers or embedded in the applications. Right now, the throughput of tokens is going to be low because most consumer hardware doesn't have a lot of AI, a dedicated hardware. But that's what I think in the end will power a lot of the efficient queries, is a local model with maybe a local database of weights that could be personal to the person and efficient in the query of the information that you need to consume from your cloud account or your personal account. I think we oriented ourselves towards more models, more dedicated, smaller, more efficient, better trained, rather than trying, like it was in the case on public data, where we're trying to make them as big as possible with as more weight as possible, but also make gigantic mistakes. Because as a company or making software for large companies, large groups that don't want to have SaaS, but they also don't want to make errors, because security is not only in pure security, it's security of integrity of data. And if we provide you wrong answers about your balance and you make a mistake, you don't want to be liable. So that's where I think it's very, very important for the next generation of AI models deployed in production to be accurate, and to remove that component of mistake is to segregate the memory of the models. But I think the progression in terms of large language models and particularly retentive networks recently for performance is very, very interesting. And we've been keeping an eye on retentive networks. I think they've been announced by Microsoft Research on August. This is very, very promising for training and scalability. That's the big aspect. And you mentioned the last aspect of AI concerning attacks and their impacts that they might cause if they're misused. Indeed, I think the cat is already out of the bag from a certain aspect on that part. The weights from extremely large models were already published, such as Llama 2, and the models from the Dubai Institute of Technology, Falcon, were also published. So malicious group can already use them to address some of their shortcomings in terms of post-recognizance, post-exploitation, initial exploitation. I think on the defensive end, it's harder to make sure that it protects. But on the attacker end of things, I think it greatly speeds up attacks. The threat model that we used in the past, where we expect the attackers not to be too knowledgeable or not to be too quick, I think is rapidly getting. We have to think more in terms of complete security instead of threat modeling, particularly for large scale enterprise and government defense. And I think from that perspective, we're somewhat better placed because we saw that coming to a certain extent. Our low ops model focuses on pure containers, and containers that are read-only and only with the Go binary. And so from that perspective, the attack surface is a lot lower. You only have to upgrade your binary in your deployments, and you don't have any CGO or statically typed libraries associated. And so our model focusing more on being cloud first, being container first, is adapted to that new world a bit more. And I think more groups should be focusing. We've seen that anyway, 60 to 75% of companies are going to Kubernetes and Docker, but they're not making that additional effort of securing their images to be scratch images. They're not doing the additional effort of getting service meshes such as Istio to even lock down further the communication between services and authorization. And finally, the big topic that we've been making efforts towards is authorization engines. Authorization engines basically allow to put rules of who owns what. It's not only who you are, but authentication that defines what you have access to. It's what you, what objects or what do you share with others. That's authorization. We've been working a while since the white paper from Google of 2018 called Zanzibar. We've re-implemented that, and we want to a certain extent re-leverage that authorization engine on the model's memory to be reused. And that's kind of one of the last aspects of R&D that we've been doing, is to better leverage authorization already well done for the applicative side to AI.
Now, Pivotal Technologies doesn't just help in building a digital transformation in the cloud and deploying new products or services for clients who might not have the skill to do high volume secure transactions, but you also, I believe you solve this problem not only in the back end, but on the front end. You deploy mobile apps for your clients. You help build end-to-end soup to nuts.
Yes. So just like we've mentioned a bit before that, I'm sorry to come back to it, but the concept of reducing your footprint, having less third parties, also can also apply to front end. And so we've been using Flutter and Dart. And Flutter and Dart has a fundamental property in terms of security that allows you to, from one code base and from their constraint solver in the front, transpile the code to web, Android, iOS, Mac, Linux, and fundamentally skip some vulnerabilities such as XSS, reduce the number of potential issues in the browsers. And from that point of view, we've been focusing a lot on Flutter and Dart. We've been working for years on it, and we've been incorporating we're using gRPC and gRPC web running on HTTP2, which are more advanced. That's kind of our advantage in backend, but you can only do that in backend if your frontend supports it. And so we've been using Flutter for a while, and we bundled with that the Ori stack for authentication. And so we end up with a system that costs much lower, that is easier to deploy, that requires less developers. So one set of developer in Flutter, given it's harder now to find Flutter developers than other native types, but with our Flutter developers, we can deploy the app for one client in web, but also in Android or iOS on the stores if it do wish to do so, but also PWA, if you guys have heard about PWA, is just a web deployment that's a bit more advanced and performs quite a bit better caching than can be installed on Android or iOS without using the App Store.
That's amazing. Ashley, is there anything else you want to share with our viewers and listeners that Pivotal Technologies does and problems you solve that we haven't covered?
Well, we talk a bit about AI. We've talked a lot about transactional systems. But at the end of the day, we wanted to provide, as a venture builder, a group that transforms and provides a better long-term solution using new protocols and more advanced development on auto patching. Those are all aspects related to maintenance. But at the end of the day, you need and you want to have the problem offloaded to a secure and trustable third party to deliver the project end to end. And we've been doing that for quite a few times. And our objective is to bring high quality cores that deal into multiple domains, whether it's large events, it's transactional system, payment system, e-commerce, high transactional, high velocity transactional platforms. We want to lower that cost eventually, lower the cost and the entry to multiple clouds by standardizing the infrastructure and creating more piecemeal products out of it. It's our objective, but as opposed to maybe a few groups, we're not going from the smaller end to the bigger end. We want to make sure to correctly address enterprise concerns and multiple business lines, the responsibilities in terms of code and multiple people. So we go from IAC, from best development practices on the high end of enterprise, and then trying to go to the smaller end. And that's our objective, and to provide not only advice, but provide you an entire portion of code that solves your problem.
That's wonderful. And I think Pivotal Technologies offers some visionary leadership in these areas, whether it's moving to the cloud, dealing with AI, regulatory compliance, high volume transactions in a stable, secure, high availability way. You figured it out, and your clients won't have to figure it out. They just need to visit your website and learn more. So I want to send our viewers and listeners to pvotal.tech. Ashley, you are the CTO of an amazing company. I want to thank you for a wonderful hot seat today.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.
Cyber Defense TV and Cyber Defense Radio have launched 24/7/365 live streams. Visit them online today at cyberdefense.tv and cyberdefense.radio. With your host and globally recognized cybersecurity expert, and my good friend, Gary Milewski.